Today's show is brought to you by KickUp. KickUp helps leaders ask the right questions to get actionable data, visualize information to guide effective next steps, and track teacher growth over time. Learn more at kickup.co. This fall's top conference for educators and leaders is the What Great Educators Do Differently conference. It'll be held October 14th and 15th in beautiful Kansas City, Missouri. See speakers like Jeff Zoa, Ken Williams, and Lavana Roth, all past guests here on the show. Register today at WGEDD.com.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
Today on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, I talk with Tijuana Giles, who's going to talk about the IMU perspective, how to get all the facts, how to celebrate kids, and how to conduct home visits. Thank you so much for listening. I never take that for granted, and enjoy the show. Well, hey, Better Leaders, I'm so excited to be with you today. My guest is Tijuana Giles, currently an assistant principal moving into her second year at Oak Grove Belmead Elementary in Virginia. I forgot the city, so forgive me, Tijuana. You could fill us in. But we are going to talk leadership today from the AP perspective. And Tijuana, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you. It's great to be here. And I teach in the city of Richmond, Virginia, urban school district. We love every minute of it. Thanks for having me, Daniel.
So Tijuana, what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Wow, that's a tough one. I was a child that grew up in the projects, a single parent, lived in Atlanta during the Atlanta child murders, and my family kind of moved. We moved into some projects in Florida, and I just wanted to be successful. I wanted something that I could be successful, and of course, the only positive thing I felt like I saw was my teachers. Specifically, I think I started with my third, fourth, and fifth grade teachers, and it just kind of inspired me, and as it was time for me to graduate and go on to college, it's something I pursued, and I just kind of wanted to have a career and provide for my have a family and provide for them. And somewhere along the way, I want to say between year three and five, my passion kicked in and I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the kids and my role in being a difference maker. And so I'm going into my 17th year now and I haven't looked back and I just love it.
So it was that, I guess, that aspect of making a difference in kids' lives that really drew you to the profession?
Drives me to it, drives me to the population that I serve, absolutely.
Do you have any stories of you being a change maker that, you know, you really like to think about or share, you know, one of your proudest moments?
Absolutely. I always tell the teachers that I work with and the families that I serve that I am you. And specifically, I worked at a particular school, inner city school, where we had about 900 kids in an elementary school, large school. And I came like in December. And I remember my principal sat down with me and said, one of your goals and the reason I brought you here is we have about 8 students, black males, that is on the verge of being kicked out of school. That's your job. That's your task. I said, however you go about it, that's your job. And I said, wow. And so I teamed up with a professor at the local university, Virginia Commonwealth, and he was also a pastor. And we kind of came up with a program for those kids where they would stay in school all day. We would take him to the church and do some STEM and do some experimenting and kind of learning how to be a man and learning how to be respectful. And their day ended at 6. We would ride the bus there. It was about 30 minutes away, come back to the school, and the parents would pick them up. And we did that all school year. And I think at the end, as we presented to the parents, because they didn't see to the last day, what I noticed was some of those kids had never, their fifth grade students, had never had an opportunity to be successful or to show that they could do something creative. And they created all types of projects, STEM, then they presented it. And it was just touching. And I thought about where we came from. And they were just one referral away from being expelled from school. And so that's the motivation. And that's why we do it, because everybody don't need paper and pencil. You have to engage them in different ways. And so I think from that, I learned it's very important to get to know your kids and truly build those authentic relationships to dig down and figure out what is it that they're passionate about that I can intertwine and support in order to get them to get what I need them to have academically. So very touching.
Yeah, I love that question that you asked there at the end. You know, what is it that they're passionate about? And it's, you know, personalized learning is becoming even more popular these days. And what you did, you know, with the small group of kids, you know, shows me that school's not just, you know, 8 to 3:30 or whatever the hours are of operation. That's you it. Sometimes have to go a little bit past that and just really develop those relationships and find opportunities for kids to be successful. But it helps to know, here's what these young men in your case were passionate about, and let's put them in a, you know, give them an opportunity so that they can show their genius and then celebrate that with them. And now they have that connection to the school and people in the school, and I'm sure that only served them well in the future.
Absolutely. And just giving them authentic opportunities to be celebrated. It's important that I think that's the creativity that we have to invoke in education from this day forward. So, yeah.
So obviously you'll go the extra mile. You're great with building relationships. But in addition to that, how would you describe your leadership style and how did you develop this style?
Wow. I think I talked to my husband a lot. And one of the things we talked about was situational leadership. When I was going to school, that was a question when I was getting my admin degree. That was one of the questions. And I remember we had this project where we had to go and interview a community leader. And I chose to do the sheriff, who was very popular. And he said to me, I'm a situational leader. That's my leadership style. And I was like, what is that? And I said, did he make that up? And I went home and I read about it. And it fit what he does as a sheriff. It's not a one size fits all. Or one of the things my husband shared with me is treat people as individuals. You have rules and you have policies, but you have to treat people as individuals. And so situational leadership, you have high ethics and you have high morals, but you got to get to the heart of every situation. And I think that's my leadership style. And I gained that through all of my experiences, including my background in the military. It has taught me that you have to get all the facts first. And so it depends on the situation, depends on all the pieces and what comes about. That's my leadership style. So, yeah.
At this point in your career, what would you say is your worst leadership mistake and what did you learn from it?
Wow. Just not listening enough, not getting all the information. Oftentimes we want to kind of, you know, we're in a fast paced world. We want to kind of make a decision and move on. That can come back to not be such a good outcome for you.
Yeah.
Just not listening and making a rush decision without getting all the facts. I recall one of the teachers who was probably frustrated had emailed me and told me some things that was happening and that the kids were misbehaving and they were doing this while they were in their resource class. And I just kind of made a decision because I heard from the teacher. Hadn't heard from the kids or the other teacher. Well, I heard from the teacher and the kids, but I hadn't heard from the other teacher.
Yeah.
And ultimately, after the decision was made, the other teacher that night emailed me and said, you got it all wrong. And, you know, it was a feeling that you have to go back and say, I rushed the judgment. Help me out. Because that taught me a lot. And I still live that to this day, that you got to get all the facts. And even if it takes 2 or 3 days, it's worth it. It's worth it.
So is there any type of practical tips you can share with our listeners in terms of collecting all the facts or listening, you know, to a satisfactory level?
One of the things I always tell everybody that I come into contact with, my entire school community, the teachers, the students, the parents, is everybody deserves their due diligence, you know, and just asking questions is not enough. I allow kids to write things down. It's important to give everybody their due diligence. One of the things I always say is I try to find out who those kids have good relationships with. And if it they could have misbehaved in class and not sharing their story, but I don't want them to go home. So I kind of get whoever they have a good relationship with, whether that's the PE teacher, the cafeteria, or the custodial staff. I say, why don't you come and talk to them and see what they tell you, walk them around, see what they tell you, what really happened, so I can get to the core of it. I want to get to the heart of it. So I just think really knowing your people, that's important. It's important to know your people.
So Tijuana, you're in your second year of being an assistant principal. You have a great, you know, many years of being an educator, and you're not a principal yet, but what would you tell yourself as you're applying for principal positions based on the experiences you've had as an educator and as an AP? What would you tell yourself in terms of, I guess, tips on how to run a school?
Wow. Definitely have your game plan. Know your game plan. Be ready to implement your game plan. Make sure everybody on your leadership team in your building know the game plan and is aware of it. And I always say, talk to your principal about how you can increase your instructional leadership capacity. And as an assistant principal, I try to take a more active role in the educational plan for the school. You know, I want to be as much a part of it because I help create it. I help reinforce it. I help we're very flexible with it. So one of the things I would say is set a goal for as many classrooms that you will visit. Do all the things that you need to do now so it just become habit. Because I always say, just because you're a great teacher doesn't mean you're going to be a great assistant principal. And just because you're a great assistant principal doesn't mean you're going to be a great principal. Those are different roles and you need to learn your role. So I think that's very, very important.
What's one class we should add to our schools that maybe isn't currently taught that you know of?
I like to see my kids being creative. I think I know we're going to this PBL model and a lot of STEM in the schools, but I like that. I like more creativity, more innovation, where kids just kind of can create and utilize their talents. So I like to see more arts in the schools. I don't think it's one particular class versus a curriculum, you know, giving kids an opportunity to grow and expand outside of just reading, writing, and math.
So I know that PBL, some people call that problem-based learning. Some others call it project-based learning. It sounds like your school is doing some of that. What have been some of the interesting outcomes, or what are some of the projects you've seen that have really blown you away?
Just seeing those, what I call those high flyers, those students that are always in trouble, Daniel, just engaged. I mean, they are truly engaged. And when they are in trouble and they see, because my librarian kind of it takes charge of that, she takes pictures of it. She put the pictures up. We always celebrate our kids in our building. So she put the pictures up on the wall. Kids are like, that's me. Look at me. And I'm like, wow, that is you. And so they are truly engaged because it's created by them. And it's, you know, as I talked earlier about ensuring that we know our students' passions, sometimes we have to introduce them to new passions. And I think that's what I see in the PBLs and the STEMs and all of those inventive projects is kids are highly engaged because they're highly creative. They're used to working with their hands, and we have to give them more opportunities to do that. So I'm just seeing them be excited about what they can do.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it, Daniel.
I love it, too. That's great, Tijuana. And, you know, you've mentioned celebrations a couple of times now. I'm wondering if you can share some other ways, you know, outside of taking pictures of them engaged in work and their probably their final products and projects. How else do you celebrate kids? But then second part of the question, you know, what's your school doing to celebrate the staff as well?
Celebrate kids. One of my PLN members has this thing of great cause home. And I started doing that and I love it. Just, you know, I have these kids that you call their parents once a month. And all of a sudden they, you know, you start in September, January, they got it together and you don't call the parents anymore. So I started reaching out to those parents and giving them updates and doing great phone call homes. But I also go by my parents' house. You know, I support them. We have a community that's a very low social economic community. So I make sure that our parents are well versed in what's happening in our building. If they need to come to the school, I don't mind coming to pick them up. I have to make sure that our social worker provide rides for them. And because I tell them, you need to come and see your child perform in the talent show. You need to see your child singing in our chorus. We celebrate our teachers weekly in our weekly message. We always send a shout out to someone. We catch them being good throughout our what I call our walkthroughs and my observations. I always take pictures myself, the other assistant principals, and our principal. And we would celebrate at least three teachers a week. We shout them out on the announcements. We put them in our weekly newsletter. And I think the significance of that goes to all of our stakeholders. That goes to our community members, our volunteers, our executive directors. So they get to see those teachers that are doing great things in our building. And so we do that for our teachers. We celebrate our students daily through incentives in the classroom, and we just try to do a lot to ensure that kids know they are valued and they mean the world to us.
So it sounds like you do home visits yourself, is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
What determines if a student gets a home visit, and can you walk us through what it's like to go on a home visit with you?
Absolutely. Currently at my school, I have two guidance counselors. I have a social worker, a psychologist, and it's two assistant principals and a principal. So I typically will grab one of those persons. If I have a kid that has not come to school in 2 or 3 days, because it's unlikely that our kids miss the days from school, if they haven't come to school, if the phone is off, we can't get in touch with the parent. If we need to see the parent and the parent don't come to school, we go home. We go to their home and have our conferences. We go to their homes and share information. If our kids coming and they seem like they're not kept, that's a visit from us. And we just try to intervene because we know we're dealing with an under-resourced population. And so we try to intervene and let them know that there are services and there's things in place for them. So it could be from the gamut to providing services, to showing them where to go to get services, to suspending their kids, to picking their kids up because they can't walk to school or mom leave for work at 3 o'clock in the morning. So it can range from a many things. So we just try to be the face of the community. One of the things we're doing starting Tuesday, Daniel, we have this, what we call reading riding bus, where one of our school buses, we take all the seats out, put all books in, and we go to all of our neighborhoods and we're like a library. We'll let the kids check out books. We come every week. And then they check them back in and check out new books. And we have teachers going. We have the administrators going. And we have food for our families. Those are things we do to build up that confidence in the community that when they see us, they run to us and not away from us, whether it's good or bad.
Yeah, right.
So we love that about our community. So we do home visits for whatever it need. If I walk in the building and someone, they tell me a particular kid isn't in school, but the kids tell me they saw him in the neighborhood, I'm coming to see him. And so that's pretty much, we do it for whatever reason. We try to reach out to our families and stay connected.
Let's pause here for a message from our sponsor. Today's show is sponsored by KickUp, a professional learning data analytics company that provides an easy-to-use platform, helping school leaders optimize their PD resources and efforts by soliciting and synthesizing teacher input on professional development needs, creating an intuitive and simple dashboard so leaders can take immediate and informed action to support teachers, measuring and reporting the impact of the PD efforts over time. Schools, districts, and charter networks leverage KickUp's platform and consultative support to synthesize data so that all stakeholders, administrators, coaches, and teachers can monitor progress, identify meaningful professional learning actions, and demonstrate and share impact. Learn more at kickup.co. Today's show is also sponsored by an amazing conference, What Great Educators Do Differently. That's on October 14th and 15th in Kansas City, Missouri. Here's two reasons why you should attend. You're going to get tools you can use. You'll leave the What Great Educators Do Differently conference with not only tools you can implement, but ideas, strategies, and skills you can put to use immediately in your classroom, school, or district. Plus, there's also crucial ongoing conversations. Our presenters are passionate about connecting face-to-face with each conference attendee throughout the conference. In addition, they're committed to continuing these conversations after the conference when attendees seek them out for guidance and support. That's the real deal. This separates the conference from all others. The speakers are very approachable. Check them out at WGEDD.com. Leading a school may be the most difficult job in the world, but what if I could guarantee that you could accomplish so much more in 1 year than you've been able to in any years past? The secret is to stop leading in isolation and to do so in community. The solution is to join one of my education masterminds. We meet weekly for an hour and discuss leadership and solve complex problems. Text Better Mastermind, that's all one word, to 33444. That's Better Mastermind to 33444 and start your journey to your best year ever. Now, back to the show. Tijuana, how do you avoid distractions and stay focused?
How do I avoid distractions? Well, as you know, being an administrator in a high needs building, it's a lot of, I call it, we're on the fast train. And I try to have a game plan every day, and I make room for opportunities for things to happen and things to come up. But some things that I try never to let interfere is the time that I'm in classrooms. So I try to visit 3 classrooms a day. And nothing comes before that. I make sure that I get in those 3 classrooms a day, and I kind of make a list of about 6 of them, and I learned that from the principal center. You always double, and so I put a list of six. Sometimes I get in six, but for the most part, every day I get in three. And that keeps me from being distracted. And I share that information with the secretaries. I share that with the administrative team. And I let the teachers know when I'm in classrooms, that's my number one priority. And so they know if they see me in the halls or they see me with my laptop or iPad, they know that's my number one priority. And so it's just being intentional and sharing your schedule and making sure that everybody knows that that is sacred time.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Principal Center. That's Justin Bader, right?
Absolutely, yes.
You know, I think I took that course too, so it's free. I encourage all the leaders of Better Leaders, Better Schools to check that out. Tijuana, do you remember the name of that course?
21 Instructional Leadership Challenge, 21-day Instructional Leadership Challenge.
Yeah, and that's good. And so you'll get an email, you get a video, you know, every day. His thing, I think Justin is, you know, just so good at making the most of every minute that you're in the school, how to say no to things that don't matter as much.
Absolutely.
Or
how to delegate,
Yep. How to delegate it, you know, how to batch those boring tasks, but, you know, essential
done.
To getting your, yep, they need to get done. But that's the best challenge. You know, I'm not going to steal all his thunder. And again, the link's going to be up in the show notes. So check out that 21-day challenge. But it's really about looking at all your teachers, and I think it's like visiting 20% of the classrooms a day. Or
10%.
10%. So it's awesome because, you know, if you're not careful, you can go throughout a day without visiting classes, engaging with teachers and kids, and really helping guide the most important work of the building, and that's instruction, right?
And that's important. Yes. When you say engaging with teachers and kids, my first year being at a school with 700 students, high need school, that's how I got to know my kids, is being in those classrooms, reading the name tags on the desk, sitting down, doing work with them is so important. It's important. And as even as an assistant principal, I still do my best to try to teach classes. You just want to stay as engaged as possible.
Right. So how long are you in a class for your walkthrough or observation?
All depends, and it all depends. Sometimes I'll do a teacher every day that week. But typically, we have about 5 classes per grade level. So I try to get through all the classes. If I go in a grade level, I try to go through all 5 of them. So anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes,
okay,
depending on the subject. If it's math, probably a little bit shorter because I know they only have an hour, but our language arts block is about 2 hours, so I know I have a whole lot more time to get to it. It all depends on what my look fors are for that day.
Yes.
If I'm trying to see a particular part of a lesson, it's shorter. So it's all dependent on what I'm looking for that particular week.
What does the teacher get after you conclude a walkthrough or observation?
I always leave something on their desk, but we also have, our district created a walkthrough form, and so I kind of drop my notes as I go. As soon as I get back, I make copies, I stick in their box, and I let them know, hey, if you would like to meet, email me. But I always leave them something on their desk. I carry around these cards that I get on these great websites, Teacher Play Teachers, and you can also order some nice cards off Vista with the chevron background that's nice and decorative. And you just kind of write nice notes on your teacher. I love the way you presented this lesson today. I love the way you took time with this particular student. You really made them feel welcome. Continue to, you know, you write those things so teachers know I was there, I was a part of it, and thank you. You always leave something positive. And then when we have those conversations, when I come back and do my formal observations, it just lends itself to that trust. And that's what you want. You want to build that trust, and you want the kids to feel comfortable with you in the room also.
The form you fill out that the district designed,
mm-hmm,
you know, I'm sure it's tied to, you know, stuff that you guys deem as really important. Is that like go ahead.
It's tied to our 7 standards, our instructional standards that the teachers, mm-hmm, are rated on. So it's tied to them. I may not see them all the time. And so depending on what that particular teacher needs is what I'm looking for the most. So it could be learning environment. I could be going in there to see what it's like. What's the learning environment? Is it conducive to learning? Are the kids engaged? It could be I'm going to see instructional delivery. And so the form focus on the 7 standards, and we kind of like jot notes on them. Professionalism, are you starting on time? Are you ending on time? Did you talk about the learning targets? Did you bring it up throughout? Does the kids know what they're doing? Do they understand their purpose?
Sure.
And so it gives them a lot of information.
And then is it like an app where you just you click sort of the level and type in some information, or how does that work?
Absolutely not, Daniel. We are scripting. We give them a lot of details. Okay. We give them a lot of details. I kind of walk them through it, you know, pretty much what I see, how I see it. A lot of times, like I told you, I take pictures, but I've also created it on Google Docs where I have those same standards in there because I'm a much faster typer than I am writer. So I can type all everything that they say in there pretty good. And so I try to give them evidence-based information. I tell them, this is what I saw. This is what you said. This is what the kid said. This is my observation from that. And so it's very detailed.
How do you want to be remembered as a school leader?
Wow. Someone that made a difference in the lives of kids. I love working with kids. I love what we do. You know, I don't necessarily want to be, I would love to have a school named after me, but the biggest thing is, did I make a difference in the time that I was here? I want to make a difference in every life, and that's the most important thing.
Can you give us a book that every principal should read right now and why?
Wow. Just one. There's a couple out there, I think, and I don't think you can read it too many times, Courageous Conversations. I think that you can have one of those every day, whether it's with your custodial staff, your cafeteria, your teachers, your instructional assistants, but you have to have them because you have to have clear expectations. And when people are not meeting those expectations, you have to be able to follow up in a caring and a calm, but clear, precise way. And so I think Courageous Conversation. And one recently that I loved is Innovative Mindset. I think as you're trying to move a school to the next place, I learned so much in that book, Innovative Mindset, and it just sparked so many ideas. So I say stay curious. You know, there's a lot of them out there, but those are some of the best ones. And anything by Todd Whitaker, I love What Great Principals Do Differently. Amazing.
Yeah. I'd like to get him on the show at some point, too.
Amazing.
That'd be a lot of fun. Yep. What Great Principals Do Differently.
Yeah, it is amazing. And he also has a series, What Great Teachers Do Differently, that I share with a lot of my teachers. Because I think it's very important. And I share that with them and I say to them, tell me one thing you gleam. I kind of go back to them weekly. And oftentimes I haven't started. I'm like, you need to start it. This is a great, read this chapter. It's amazing. And so just kind of giving them some background knowledge on, this is not the first time it's been done. Here's how you can do it and make it better.
What do you do for fun?
Spend time with family and my kids and just enjoy. I'm a big sports fan, love sports. I'm a Golden State Warriors fan. So hopefully by the time this come out, Golden State Warriors will be 2-time champions.
We will see, huh? I mean, they're playing tonight
as we're
recording, so this is exciting. Game 7.
Yes, they are. So just a lot of sports, a lot of activities. Daniel, I was in the military, and I just love the competition. I love the level of competition, and I love it in education. I love it academically. I love it professionally. I love it in sports. I think that a lot of the things that happen in sports lends itself to education. You know, you have to have a game plan. You have to be prepared. You have to be willing to retool that game plan. You have to step back. You have to have a team. You have to be able to ask questions and communicate with everyone.
I'm on a mission to defeat everybody I meet in rock, paper, scissors. So if we were to play, what would you throw first?
Always rocks.
Always rock. Okay. It's good. A lot of people have said paper so far.
Because
they think that somebody's going to throw a rock. So it's, you know, I'm just collecting my data because at some point I'm going to try to play everybody in the world and defeat them.
Outstanding, outstanding.
So we have a few fun questions before getting to the last one, which is a big one at the end of the show. And I didn't come up with these questions. I'm stealing them from something called Enki Village.
Okay.
But I like the idea. It's the Would You Rathers.
Okay.
And so we've had a lot of fun with these, with the guests. So the first question is, would you rather be without elbows or be without knees?
Wow. Knees.
No knees. You got it. Would you rather have to sneeze but not be able to, or have something stuck in your eye for an entire year?
I would rather sneeze and not be able to. I have to see.
Yes, that's true. Would you rather never be able to speak again or always have to say everything that is on your mind?
I would love to be able to always say everything that's on my mind. And that's without consequences, right?
I didn't say that.
I would love to be able to say everything that's on my mind. And then I can always blame it on that.
You could. That's a good answer. I like that. Would you rather be able to read or be able to read minds but be illiterate?
I would like to be able to read always. There's nothing better than a good book.
That's true. So Tijuana, you've made it to the end. We're going to answer this last question, and thank you so much for being on the show. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create the school if you're given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building the school?
My top three priorities would be my hiring process. I would first hire my leadership team. Then I would hire great people to help with the vision of the school. And that, I don't know who that would be in terms of architect-wise, in terms of instructional-wise, but it would be great people that I would do the research on that would help me build not only a beautiful structure, but also ensuring that I'm staffing it with the very best people and it is state-of-the-art, so that my kids are coming into a building that is state-of-the-art with highly qualified teachers, because my belief is that if we want to provide the best for our kids, we have to give them the best that there is. And so that's one of the things that I would do with an unlimited budget.
Tijuana, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
The best way to get a hold of me is through Twitter. I love Twitter. My handle is at Tijuana G, T-I-A-W-A-N-A-G. I love it, so always shoot me something in that. I love the graphics. But I always say stay positive and make a difference. Be a difference maker. That's all I have for you.
Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Tijuana. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Tijuana in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Tijuana, thank you for sharing your leadership insights, and thank you so much for helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you so much. Great being here.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.